from KQED.
Welcome back to this morning's forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Hawaii and Japan both experienced false alarms about nuclear missile strikes in recent days, and such errors are raising questions about the reliability of emergency warning systems and how notification of a nuclear attack would unfold in California. Recent wildfires and landslides have also exposed weaknesses in alert systems and whether they actually reach those most in peril. Forum is going to discuss in this segment California's emergency alert system with the director of the state's Office of Emergency Services, Mark Ghilardocci, and we welcome you to the program. Good morning.
Good morning.
Glad to have you. I guess the place to begin here is we've been getting a kind of consensus that false emergency, the like of which happened with the ballistic missile nuclear 38 minutes warning in Hawaii, is very unlikely to happen here. And you could perhaps explain that to us. But there's still a great deal of concern in the wake of that. And not only concern about that, but our emergency systems in general, what we learned from Hawaii and what we learned from the wildfires up north here and the mudslides, for that matter, in Santa Barbara, which I just pretty much covered. But are you revising your system now? And how safe is the system in comparison to, say, what happened in Hawaii? Could it happen here?
Yeah, a great question. I mean, I think that it's important to kind of think back for a second, though, and understand really how this emergency alert system has evolved and how it started and where we're at today. You know, California historically hasn't really used these massive alert systems. We haven't really had the need outside of maybe what we are used to seeing on the news, the emergency alert system. Sometimes you get that comes across your news, says this is a test of the emergency alert system. That system was actually created in the Cold War. It was designed to address the event of a potential, you know, sort of a nuclear conflict back in the 60s and 70s. And it's kind of continued. It's been used mostly for weather-related events now. And then as time has gone on, particularly because of hurricanes in the southern states and on the East Coast, the need to put more alerting out to the public has increased, and the fact that the public itself has moved away from, you know, traditional media forms to things like mobile media, cell phones, and other kinds of things, that they're getting all of their content, their news, their information on cell phones, has really driven the requirement to be more specific with regards to being able to warn the public. Now, that said, we've also seen in the last several years an increasing number of very extreme events, whether it's extreme weather events, extreme fire events, whatever the case may be, it's required us to continue to evolve that process and ensure that we can effectively get the right information and the reliable information out to the public. And we have a relatively redundant, reliable system here in California, continuing to make it better. But it is a collaborative effort between our local governments and our federal government, working with FEMA and the Department of Homeland Security and the FCC at the federal level to ensure that we've got appropriate capabilities to provide that alert that could go out simultaneously as necessary throughout the entire state. But most of the warnings that get put out in California are typically generated at the local level. And that is because if you have a wildfire, say a wind-driven fire, or you have some sort of a hazardous material, or God forbid, an active shooter type of situation, most of that's happening right at the local level. Local authorities know where and when to evacuate or to move people that are in harm's way. And they'll work with my office, but they will put out those warnings and alerts on a local basis. And it's only in the extreme conditions, or in the case of this kind of thing, a ballistic missile situation incoming, that the state, my office, would actually put out a state wide warning. And we haven't done very many of those. We do practice internally, but we've got very stringent protocols to ensure that something like happened in Hawaii would not happen here.
You've also got a vote coming up on a drafted bill January 30th to allow state and local agencies to send longer messages and more to more precise locations. But the system, which goes back, you were talking about the history, this goes back to 2012 with Amber. It's an Amber Alert system, basically, with limited registration on the system. And a lot of these things are really outdated. You really need, I think, so the argument goes, new things that are not only statewide, but that can get the warnings out and get the warnings out when they need to be sent out. I mean, there have been some bad calls, at least from some people's perception. There should have been much more distribution and dissemination of the warnings that went out in the fires here in Northern California and likewise in the mudslides down in Santa Barbara.
Yeah, well, I mean, I would agree with you. I mean, this continues, as technology continues to improve, as we get a better understanding of how this technology can be applied. And let me just say that, you know, historically there have not been specific standards that have been set. And that's one of the things that we're looking at now in how to implement alert warning protocols and standards that all local government and the state would operate under. On balance, we're also working with the FCC, which currently, as you just mentioned, has a system that has allowed us to only have a limited amount of characters in the system, so that it makes it very, very difficult at times when there's fast-moving events to be able to get the right information out. Those are all issues that we are improving as the technology improves. Many local governments use a variety of different kinds of privately run sort of distribution systems, and that's just because, you know, the private sector has filled the gaps in being able to get those messages out. But really, the area that you're speaking about and the thing that we have been focusing on since before the fires in Northern California, but has accelerated since then, is really looking at developing some guidelines and standards that set templates and warnings and specific types of warnings for different kinds of conditions. And then also to build systems that are actually require an opt-out from the public. Currently, most systems that are operated by local authorities are an opt-in, and it's incumbent upon the citizen themselves to determine whether they want to get the warnings or not. And we want to flip that around, and we want to make that it has to take an active role of the citizen to opt out of a system. Otherwise, they are going to get the warnings and alerts. They're going to come forward, and they're going to get that information.
We're talking, if you just joined us, with Mark Ghilarducci. He's the director of California Governor's Office of Emergency Services, and we'll give you an opportunity to speak with him and raise any questions or comments you might have. I just wonder, though, would it be possible for one person to push the wrong button in California, a la what occurred in Hawaii? Is that even plausible here?
It is not plausible here because of the way we have first of all, the way we have our emergency warning controllers. They are multiple controllers. There's protocol set that when a message is developed, it's coordinated with a supervisor, and actually we do it in a collaborative effort with our federal and our local counterparts. We have the capability through our state warning center to pick up one phone line and connect with all 58 counties simultaneously. We do that on a regular basis. We test that system. But to actually push out the wording in a message, that's a coordinated effort that involves more than one person, and there's some authentication and checks and balances before the message is actually sent out.
Well, what are your concerns here, listeners I'm talking to, and what needs to be done in checks and balances, reaching more people? There are a lot of questions here, and I think Mike Ghilarducci is with us and is welcoming whatever questions you may have, I hope. Let me give you a phone number so you can join us now. The toll-free number is available. It's 866-733-6786, and you can join us right now at that number. Again, please feel free to call us, 866-733-6786. Other ways you can join us with questions or comments is by emailing us, forum@kqed.org, or going right to our website, kqed.org/forum, and simply click on this segment or tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum, but please feel free to be part of the program and to bring your questions and comments forward. There is some legislation I wanted to just mention. It was it has more suggestions in terms of statewide standards. Mike McGuire put it forward. He's, of course, state senator from Healdsburg. And this would mean essentially training and more deploying in each of the states and counties. And also last month, what do I call you, director, Mark?
Yes, that's fine.
Is that the right title? I want to ask Director Ghilardocci just about a bill that requires all counties to be able to send WEIAs, that's wireless emergency alerts, to create protocols and procedures for when and for how to use. And so that was a big catalyst from the wildfires, wasn't it?
That's correct. You know, we've been working with Senator McGuire and Senator Dodd and Senator Hannabeth Jackson on the language of these. It's a collaborative effort to ensure that the issue about standards and requirements on the part of local government. So there's some baseline across the state that we can all ensure that it's going to be very common operating platform.
But sending out to the largest numbers is still really a challenge here. I mean, in terms of just getting the word out, and particularly, you know, when you got a lot of people sleeping at night and that sort of thing.
Well, this is true. I mean, look, there's no silver bullet with warning. And really, warnings are only as good as what the general population knows to do once they get a warning. You know, a lot of this has to do, if you live in California, it's a disaster-prone state. I mean, that's been, you know, proven over the last 4 months all over California. And our citizens need to understand that they need to be prepared. They need to know where they live. They need to understand the threats in their region. They need to develop a family plan and have the appropriate supplies. The warning is just another item, but it is not the silver bullet. And that's really important that we make that clear, that it's a tool in the toolbox of being able to make sure people are informed. But the empowerment of what they do is really rests with them being prepared.
Let me bring our callers in. Let's begin, Brendan, with you. Good morning. You're on the air.
Good morning. Thanks for the opportunity to talk to you guys. My parents were affected and survived the Valley Fire in Lake County 2 years ago. They're elderly. They don't have a cell phone that is connected to their hip. They're in a rural community. I during that fire, they did not get a phone call. The reverse 911 didn't work. They didn't hear a single siren from a fire engine. Nothing on their cell phones. I think the overuse or the over-reliance on technology to get the word out is only at the most a partial approach to notifying people of an emergency situation. In particular, in this case, in the old days, we used to hear like sirens that would echo throughout the valleys, and they would be tested once a month at 12 noon on Friday. I think we need to look at a multi-pronged approach to notification of these types of emergencies.
You raise an important point, Brendan, and I thank you for it. Let me go to Director Ghilardocci.
You know, that is, his comments are spot on, and that's why I said, you know, the warning through the system that we're talking about is really a tool, but it is not the silver bullet. You know that it's not our protocols currently include not just putting out the emergency alert, but sending law enforcement and fire service out to do door knocking. You know, during the fires in Northern California, over 10,000 homes, people went in, law enforcement, to knock on doors to get people alerted to move them out. But you know, there are certain conditions where even that is going to be problematic. And when we have these fires moving at 200 feet per second, wind driven, moving through a community in the middle of the night, it is very, very problematic to get that warning out. We are looking at the old siren model. We're looking at other ways to be able to address the notification process. We also are working with our telecommunication industry. You know, the private sector, telecoms, we're using their systems, their fiber networks, their microwave systems, their cell towers, to be able to count on to get the message out. In the Northern California fires, many of those failed. And so even working with them, those telecoms really need to ensure that that their cell towers are redundant and resistant to disaster, that there's good clearance, and that they have battery backup or generator backup to ensure that they stay up when we need them the most. So there are a number of things, lessons learned, and areas that we're looking at. But the caller's point, Brandon's call points, are spot on with the fact that that this is a challenge, and it's not an easy solution to meet everyone's needs.
Yeah, it reminded me of the fact that the Santa Barbara emergency alerts didn't go out until after the mudslides began in Montecito and up in Sonoma. There was concern about putting emergency alerts out because there would be too many cars and emergency vehicles and fire trucks wouldn't be able to get through. We also have a lot of people asking about just what to do about low-tech sirens. In fact, I think I have a caller on that. Let me get to Pam next. Pam, you're on.
Thank you. I went through the Napa fires, and the night of the big fire with 90-mile-an-hour winds, I called two of my friends who were asleep to wake them up. And then during the week, there were so many people that had absolutely no information because there was no cell coverage. My suggestion is two things. Number one, that a smart siren system be used, which means it's almost like Morse code. It's not just a siren. It's a siren with information. And the information is how serious, what direction, and what area. So you can do beep, 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 beep. You know, you figure that out. And then also, I think there needs to be satellite stops where people can actually get current information reliably from a satellite phone that's a public phone that can be like maybe at Starbucks or something, so that people at least know where they can go to get information when these kind of things are happening. And if you go back through the logs on Nextdoor, which is kind of a Facebook for neighbors, you read these tragic accounts of people desperate to get information with no knowledge of anything, no coordinated information. So the family is not the way to get any information, and the silver bullet is communication that's reliable, a smart siren and a satellite cell access.
Pam, I thank you for those suggestions. Do you want to comment, Director?
Well, again, you know, I think they're very valid points. You know, there's a lot of technology that's out there. It's finding the best technology to be used for the most appropriate way. And we're even looking at not a necessary satellite phone where somebody would go to, but a satellite-based notification system so that it's not dependent upon ground fiber and some of the things that we're going to see on the ground. But the points are well taken, and getting the information out to everybody in the timely fashion is really the effort and the intent. There is technology, but you have to determine how best that technology, and then what are the cascading related requirements to ensure that technology works well. So in emergency management, typically we approach things in a redundant fashion so that there's not just one way to be able to get communications out. We use multiple ways. And I think that to her point there, she's listed, in fact, the last couple of callers have listed a couple of different ways, whether it's audible sirens, special kinds of satellite communication, we're looking at a number of different areas to try to address that.
And we're discussing the California Emergency Alert System with Mark Ghilarducci. He's director of the California Governor's Office of Emergency Services, the OES. And I'd like you, Director, to hear a cut. We have Contra Costa County Supervisor John Joya talked with KQED's Ted Goldberg just recently on the issue of emergency notifications, and I'd like your response to something he said.
We do need to have some greater discussion and preparation, really led by California Department of OES, about how to address a potential nuclear weapon coming to California. I mean, each county has, or many counties, not all, have systems to notify residents for smaller emergencies that are confined to particular areas of the county. We're talking here something of a totally different scale where we really need both federal and state help and assistance in notification. This can't be done city by city or county by county.
Again, that's Contra Costa County Supervisor John Gioia talking with our own Ted Goldberg. Your thoughts, Director?
Well, the supervisor's correct. When it comes to something like an incoming threat, like a nuclear weapon, it's that kind of message that's not going to come from local authorities. That's going to come from the state. But let me kind of run through the protocol that currently exists associated with that. So what happens is that, the federal government is the primary organization that is monitoring the potential for incoming threat like that. So that's between NORAD and a number of different other places that are looking for and monitoring these kinds of incoming.
It also sounds like he's saying the state needs more leadership. Is there enough leadership on this score?
Let me go through how the thing goes through, and then I'll get to that point. Because once the threat is recognized, the federal government turns to us. If it's coming, and the threat is to California, the federal government would turn to us, and they would share that information with us. We would then, through a protocol-driven process, would then put out a statewide emergency alert. We did something very similar, not statewide, but we did it to the 8 Southern California counties simultaneously just about a month ago when we had a statewide red flag condition. And the fire weather was so extreme on the concern for a number of fires breaking out in Southern California that we put out this 8-county alert that went out to all the people in Southern California. There is a process to do that, and that currently exists today. Now, what follows that alert has to be direction on what to do. And I think to the supervisor's point is that they're looking at not only having us lead the effort to ensure that education is in place, reiterate the training that goes along with that. So following the Cold War, we used to do a lot of this. Depending on what age you are, you may be remembering that we did a lot of training in schools and get under your desk, and there was regular sirens. Over the years, as the nuclear threat abated, so did that effort and that emphasis, and we moved more to natural disaster preparedness. To this day, really natural disaster preparedness or preparedness for any kind of disaster is the most important thing that people can do. If you get any kind of a warning and then listen to the direction that goes with that, it's really going to be based upon you being prepared as a family, having a family plan. We don't have bomb shelters anymore. We don't have these specific protocols about going underground. We don't even have that capability that exists in our state or our country anymore. But we do know, we've learned a lot more about what kind of threats could exist from a detonation of that kind of weapon. And really it's about the fallout that may take place. So that's why we recommend when you get those kind of warnings to go indoors, go to a safe place, keep your doors and windows closed, listen to further direction. There has been discussion with the federal government about enhancing information that we could share with the public. And they're currently, we've been in talks with them to be able to put a new program in place to be able to share. But we're not there yet because, the question is that what is the credible threat from this kind of thing to California? And really, while there's been a lot of rhetoric that's being pushed around, the actual threat has not materialized. And so that's why we say, look, if you live in California, really focus on being disaster prepared, because those are the skills and that's the materials that you're going to need regardless of what kind of a threat you're facing.
Well, speaking of threats, I'm looking at a vexing question here from a listener named Lorraine who says, given the fact that Russia seemed able to disrupt our electoral process, what possibility might there be that they have or could also trigger such a false alert?
Well, that's a great question, it's without getting into the extreme detail about the the redundant capabilities that we have to be able to put the alert out. There are a number of different pathways that that they would have to get into,
Don't give anything away here, Director. We don't want you to have to give it.
We've got a lot of different systems that preclude that, and we're constantly looking for that. And that particular system is wrapped around a cybersecurity network that's pretty strong. I've been in this business long enough to tell you that I never say never, and so it's one of those things that we're constantly monitoring to ensure that there is no nefarious action in the cyber world.
Well, another question from a listener who says, what's the answer for me as a citizen? Do I get a landline, a ham radio? What alerts do I subscribe to?
Well, I think that a couple things. One is that everybody should have a portable radio with batteries. That's old school. And, having that capability to be able to, regardless of whatever happens, we're still going to push information out through your AM radio and be able to push that information out. Individuals should approach their needs through redundancy like we do. So having a portable transistor radio is one way to do it. Most everybody has a cell phone now. Opt in to talk to your community, where depending on where you live, every community's now got these systems. Opt into those systems, whether whatever the carrier is that your community is using. Meet with your local fire department. Ask them about disaster preparedness activities, and I think you're going to get the information. Once you get an alert of whatever, you need to put in action your plan. And then execute it.
We'll let it stand there. Director Ghilardotti, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate your being with us this morning.
Happy to be with you guys. Thank you very much.
And again, Mark Ghilardotti is Director of California Governor's Office of Emergency Services, Cal-OES. And we are here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, an hour repeat at 10 to 11 in the evening. KQED Forum is produced by Judy Campbell, Tina Lauerberg, Susan Britton, and Katie Springer. Senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. And our engagement producer is Amanda Stupai. And we get online support from Devin Holt and Amanda Font. Intern is Patrick Fitzgerald, managing editor Ethan Lindsay. Our executive producer is Holly Kernan. For all of us at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by Jan Schramm and Maria Minetti Schramm, founders of the Minetti Schramm Museum of Art at UC Davis, which preserves the legacy of renowned artists such as Wayne Thiebaud for future innovators by dedicating a third of its space to arts education.